for most professional people, there has to be some sort of balance between work and personal life. Well, when your work is in your personal life, there's really no differentiating between the two. And so you're always on.
And welcome back to Hustlin' and Heels Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I'm your co-host, Angie.
And we are back for another week, another episode, where we are talking to you all about topics that matter to hustlers. And what is a hustler? Well, anybody, really. You could be hustling from home, raising a bunch of babies, doing the real work that I was only able to be a stay-at-home mom for 1 year, and there's a reason, because it's the hardest job I've ever had. So maybe that's you. Maybe you're hustling with a couple babies on your hips. Maybe you are one of our 20% male listeners who are hustling in some work boots and listening to us on your work truck. We have a couple semi-drivers listening. Do they still use CVs? I don't know. I doubt they do. But if they did, I wonder what my handle would be. I don't know. That's a topic for another one. Squirrel. All right. So regardless, we are happy that you are joining us, hustlers, wherever you may be joining us. And this week we are enjoying a gift of wine. Actually, it's sparkling wine. So I want to give a little bit of context to this. Back in, oh gosh, maybe last year sometime in the spring, I went to a marketing conference out of California. It was a great time. And I met this awesome ideas company. That's what they call themselves. They're an ideas company. They had a booth there, and they are based out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They're called Epicosity. So Epicosity. If you don't follow them on Facebook and Instagram, that should be your first step, because they post some pretty epic stuff. I love their brand. I love what they do. They are a global marketing agency. They blend traditional with a strong digital footprint. They're essentially storytellers, but they do it all digitally. So they know what they're doing. So anyways, I met one of their sales reps, Justin, and we've developed a business partnership where I can bounce some marketing ideas off of him, and they just come up with some really cool ideas, and we like to follow them and see what kind of videos that they offer. So the cool thing, one of the cool things about this company, in addition to their digital strategy, is that they like to send their partners and their clients alcohol. So, I mean, if you've ever received a crate of beer, you know that these are the kind of people you want to be friends with for life. So they celebrate Craft Beer Fridays. There's a lot of breweries in their area. So they sent us a crate of some awesome craft beer. And then just recently, I received a package that had some sparkling wine in it. And when you open it up, it's the name of the wine is Magic Idea Stuff. And it came with this cute little marketing, flashy, colorful booklet that had this whole story of these elves and how they came up with this magic idea stuff, and they're drinking it and coming up with good ideas. So I thought, why not on this episode, where we are going to be talking to someone who really excels in that digital world, it seems pretty appropriate that we break open a bottle of the magic idea stuff. Plus, it's sparkly, and with New Year's, it's the season for that, really. And so a long story to talk about what we're drinking tonight, but I bring it up because it's a cool bottle, it's a cool name from a cool company, and I want to just give them a shout out because they're doing some really cool stuff out there.
And it's very appropriately named. I mean, being in the marketing world, we all know that the best ideas come when you have a little bit to drink.
Right.
It's obviously magic ideas.
Coffee, wine, it doesn't matter as 100%. Long as, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what fuels the creative juices. Yeah. So it's good stuff. So thank you to Epicosity and Justin mm-hmm. and your team you. For sending us that. Pretty cool. So, and how's your week been?
It's been okay. The holidays were really nice. Got to spend it with the nephews, 4 and 6. And man, those ages, like, Christmas morning is always magical. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. We haven't had the chance, the opportunity to do that since I think Todd and I have been married. So it was fun to do this year. And then I worked yesterday, but I've got the next few days off. So I don't go back until Wednesday.
Nice.
It'll be full of friends and relaxing and just kind of gearing up to roll into 2019 and in a great way and take it by storm.
That's awesome. Christmas was good. Christmas was great. We had the kiddos on Christmas morning and they opened up. I did buy my son his very first 22 rifle. Necessary for squirrel hunting. That's how you start. And Nana Claus brought the kids, keyboard, acoustic guitar, a dollhouse. So the house got a lot louder this week.
Well, they can join my nephews because they got a drum set.
Yeah.
So they can start a band together.
Yeah. If anybody gets my kids a drum set ever, we are no longer on speaking terms. I mean, I'm getting the basement finished, so there's a place, but no.
Right.
Not happening. So anyways, I hope you all had a great holidays as well. We're going to be heading into 2019, and it's going to be a pretty good year. We're pretty excited about some stuff we're doing, too. At the end of the show, we'll talk about, some of the cool stuff that we have coming up. So, all right. We do have a guest with us tonight, and I'm so excited because she really is kind of a genius in her field. And so I'm excited to bring her in here into the studio and grateful that she said yes when I asked her. So I'd like to introduce you all to Miss Audrey Phoenix.
Hello, how are you?
We're doing well. So you have a pretty cool story and a pretty cool background, but to let the listeners know, we actually work together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's cool to see her in action. The best way to describe Audrey is if you have an idea in your mind about something you want to see visually, or you have like a concept, or like here's the project, you don't really have to give her too much direction because that will just like hamper the process. You just want to let her run.
That makes her a writer's dream.
Yeah.
100%.
So, and then usually it takes about a quarter of the time that you think it would, and about 1/16th of the time that it would take me to create something. And then it's just there, and it's beautiful, and it's up on billboards, and it's up on websites, and digital signs, and in your mailbox, and all kind of cool stuff like that. Is it cool to see your work?
It's something that I've only been accustomed to over the last about 2 years. Generally, most of my work was online before I started working here. So I wouldn't really see it a whole lot. But now I'm seeing it on billboards and on water tanks at Redbud.
Yes, Audrey is responsible for the design of the water tank wrap at Redbud Motocross in my beloved hometown of Buchanan. We were the sponsors this year of the 2018 Motocross National Race, and she was the one that designed that giant water tank wrap.
So I've worked with a couple of celebrities before, but I still... When you have everything online, it still doesn't pop up in mm-hmm. your everyday life. So it's still a very different experience. And just over the last couple of weeks, hearing about some of my things popping up in real life is kind of jarring. I was telling you, it's just not something I'm used to. I found out that a friend of mine who was a politician in South Carolina was running for, I think it was county commissioner. And I did a bunch of just Facebook graphics for him because he was really cool. We went to Jamaica once. I met him at a resort. Anyways, I just did this Facebook stuff. It took me like 5 minutes just because what he was putting out was almost offensive.
That's the thing I love about her. Like, she can't take it. Like, if it's something that's ugly, like, she can't even take it. She just got to fix it.
It makes my eyes twitch. Like... I remember when I bought my first house, squirrel, but I remember when I bought my first house, the first room you walked into was like this wrong color of yellowish green. And so I had to use the back door for the first 3 days after we, because I couldn't handle the color. Like, you know, some people are sensitive to smells and stuff. When I see something that's just that, I get
That's so funny.
Visibly uncomfortable.
Uh-huh. I'm not like that, but I understand because as a writer, when I read a book and there are grammatical errors, I can't yes. do it. I can't finish it. Uh-huh. So I imagine it's probably similar to that for somebody who's in the design world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. So about being a writer too, do you also find that like when it's really bad writing, like that you can't even pay attention to it either?
Oh, 100%. I actually just read a book like that. The context of it was so good,
mm-hmm.
but it was so predictable and the writing mm-hmm. was sort of so blasé that I thumbed through it and like quick read it until I got to maybe the last three chapters because those were really good.
Yeah.
But it could have been so good. It could have been so great. And, you know, like graphic design, you know, the logo could have been so great. It had so much potential. But yes.
That's how I feel about 50 Shades of Grey. I couldn't do it.
I never read it.
I couldn't. I tried, like a friend of mine gave it to me and I was like, this is the worst writing. I can't even get into the story. I'm sorry. I know it's supposed to be good. I know it's supposed to be sexy. I know it's supposed to be like the thing that you read like 2 years ago. I couldn't do it. The writing was so awful.
I never read it, but I did catch it on TV
mm-hmm.
and watched it. I had so many opinions.
For another episode.
We don't need it. Yes, no. For another episode.
I'm sorry, yes. I totally digress. All right, let's go back. So that's something that you're experiencing now.
Yeah, I had done just Facebook graphics for someone who was running for county commissioner, and he won his election. And then I found out just recently that I had done a logo in my spare time for, you know, a public school mm-hmm. millage thing, and they won. I'm like, huh, I'll be darned.
You got a winning record, 2-0. Yeah. That's what you should start promoting.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So let's, what's your official title?
Whenever people ask me what I do, I usually tell them I draw the stuff. I draw stuff.
I tell them she makes things look pretty.
I draw the stuff. That's kind of like my go-to. Uh-huh. My job title is creative specialist. Uh-huh. And I think graphic designer is probably
that's,
more.
Okay, that's what it's. I think creative specialist is almost like this new wave or new age thinking of like graphic design, but it seems to be more graphic design.
The person that hired me mm-hmm. uses creative as a noun.
Okay.
And that's kind of new to me.
Uh-huh.
I tend to think of it as an adjective.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
You know, but he uses it as a noun, mm-hmm. like to describe all of the things
creative.
That have been created. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's where that comes from. But mm-hmm. when, to make it easier for everybody else in the world mm-hmm. to understand, I just tell people I'm a graphic designer mm-hmm. here. I have a lot of experience in web design prior to this, which is a very different type of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, that's doing code on computers is a lot like doing math. There's a lot of different ways to come up with the same result.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes kind of an art, sort of mm-hmm. like a science. You can look at people's style of writing and see, you know, what solutions they mm-hmm. use to achieve different things. And so I did that for a long time, but it's the kind of coding that I was doing is changing like mm-hmm. technology does. Mm-hmm. And graphics are where my soul is really, really at. Like it comes to me. I don't know how to describe it. Like, and I can see that a lot of people don't really see the value in that, particularly mm-hmm. small business owners,
mm-hmm.
you know, don't really understand that this is how you're presenting yourself mm-hmm. to the world. So you want to look on point, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Visuals are what keep you top of mind and provide the appeal and encourage the engagement, and get them to buy in and invest.
I couldn't tell you the number of people that I see that are using VistaPrint or PowerPoint to make their own business cards, and they're using, you know, rainbow backgrounds with Comic Sans or some other font that came installed with Windows, you know, and they're excited and you want to be so happy for them because it's their business and everything else, but you're also screaming like, I am not there. I'm an amateur. I'm not, you know, it just, it gives you a very, very sketchy feeling. Yeah, it does.
Like, you're not only the CEO, sales, everything of your company, but you're also the graphic designer. Like, it does present that. So obviously, people have limited resources. You know?
So, listeners, if you know anybody like that, or if you happen to be that person, feel free to reach out to Audrey, because she will polish you up.
Yes, and we will provide her her preferred contact information should you like to request a quote. Or Audrey has a side hustle. She's a hustler. That's why she's on Hustle and
Heels. That's why she's here.
So we'll get to that at the very end for sure. So let's take it back. So let's talk about a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up? What was life like?
I grew up for the most part in Southwest Michigan. I did a little bit of time up by Detroit, and I was technically born.
When you say did time,
well. If you met my family, you would understand what I meant by doing time. But no, I was born in California, and then my family moved to north of Detroit, a little bit Highland, and then moved back to California, and then to Southwest Michigan, where I am now. And, you know, this area, it's like the Godfather. You try to get out, and it pulls you back in. You know, and I enlisted in the military for a while. That got me out of town for a bit. And try to get out, and it pulls you back in. I've had kids. I wanted them to have relationships with grandparents, you know, and whatnot. So, and back here.
Yeah.
But.
So talk a little bit about that military background, because was that right out of high school?
So the day after I graduated high school, I tried to move to Kansas City with a couple of friends of mine. And about a year in, we were just financially stupid. I mean, we were like, 19 and wasn't making it. But I really didn't want to get sucked back in. And I decided that enlisting in the Army would be a much better option than moving back to Southwest Michigan. And so that's what I did.
Okay, so you enlisted in the Army. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, my job in the Army, surprisingly enough, was graphic design. I went to Baltimore to do my job training, which was, for, 15-week program? I think it was phenomenal, because they kind of gave you a little bit of everything. You had a few weeks of, fine art, painting and drawing and stuff like that. And then we got into digital art, photoshopping, illustration, and stuff like that. And then at the end, we did some video and sound editing. So they give you just a little bit, enough to get you started in each area of graphic design, and then kind of send you out to your post.
Well, it makes sense after hearing that the military has graphic designers. However, I would have never thought that that was a position in the military. Is that a common theme? Do people say that to you a lot?
It is an existing job in the Army, but it is difficult to get, the military, they run on numbers. Yeah. So there's only so many job openings per year. There's only so many promotions available for that per year. If anyone's considering going into the military, if you want to be in the military as a career, don't be a graphic designer. It is very, very hard to advance, in the military. Mm-hmm. With that job. But if you're doing it because that's what you love, it's a good way to lock yourself in for some good benefits for the future.
So what were some of the projects that you worked on when you were in the military?
Well, when I was peacetime, like stateside, I was stationed in Oklahoma, and mostly it was being a PowerPoint warrior, or if someone was getting promoted, there was a change of command ceremony. Mm-hmm. We had a soldier's ball every year where we would make a video yearbook type of thing, basically just run-of-the-mill office stuff. I mean, really, until you get sent somewhere, being in the Army is very similar to being in any other office, except for the fact you have to go exercise at 6 a.m. before work every day. Mm-hmm. That makes it a little different.
Sure.
And then, a couple of times a month, you'll not go to the office. You'll go blow something up instead. That does also make it a little different. It's pretty sweet. I got to tell you. It's pretty cool.
It's one of my greatest regrets, not going into the military.
I actually feel like you would have done really well.
I tried. I tried to get into the military. I did. After I graduated from college, I contacted a recruit and said, I'd like to join the Air Force, but I already have a degree. I don't want to go in and enlisted. I want to go into officer training candidate school. And he must have been having a bad day. He said, what was your degree in? I said, history. And he said, dime a dozen. Can't use you right now. I'm like, wait, what? I'm telling you, I had good grades. Like, I'm physically fit. I could totally handle officer training. And he was like, I don't know. And I was like, okay. Dude called me every week for the next 8 months. And I was like, no, man, you told me no. Right? But I still wish I would have.
You would. Do their PT tests on a elliptical or something, or the treadmill.
But Audrey, I really like their uniforms.
My parents were both in the Navy.
Yeah.
I was born on a naval base.
Really?
Such a swirl moment, but yeah, I was born on a naval base in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. No, I think I would have loved it. I think I probably would have loved the Army or the Navy, too. I think I would have liked either. I'm not really a big water person, though, so not the Navy. But, okay, so, I digress. I wasn't in the military. This is not about me. So, you were stateside, but then you...
Then I was sent to... Yeah, I was sent to Iraq. Not a whole lot of demand for graphic design services in Iraq. I found... although I did manage the PowerPoint warrior a few times while we were over there because, you know, everybody needs to know certain things. How much toilet paper do we have left? It was part of my graphics display for the day. How many people do we have that are sick and, you know, stuff like that. But mostly I was your average run-of-the-go grunt, you know, just pulling guard duty, the burn barrels. I did that every other day.
What does that mean?
So, for when you go over there, there aren't garbage removal services or anything like that. You actually have to burn everything.
Yeah.
And from when I say everything, I'm talking trash, remains, human waste, you know, whatever it is that we have no other means of getting rid of. Mm-hmm. Be put in a giant pit and doused in diesel fuel and then set ablaze. Well, someone has to stir it. Otherwise, the diesel just burns off the top and the things are not actually disposed of. And so I did this every other day for most of my deployment. And unfortunately, that is one of the things that is causing so many health problems in veterans.
Really?
Is these burn barrels is sort of like our generation's Agent Orange, if you would. So
really, this is the first time I'm ever hearing of that. So what do you mean by that? I mean, I know what Agent Orange is, but I'm saying, what do you mean by, like, this is becoming an issue it's a pretty prevalent issue. What kind of health impact is it causing?
It's causing various types of autoimmune disorders and lymphomas, mostly in people right around my age. And actually, last November, I was also diagnosed with a 13-millimeter pancreatic tumor with malignant features. I've gone to a couple of specialists who say they think that the malignant features part is subjective, and they don't really think that it's cancerous, you know. So in that respect, yay.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of people that have not been that lucky. But it seems that it takes the military an average of about 20 years to acknowledge a service-connected issue like that. And I imagine that's because if they do it too soon, there's too many people affected. That's a lot of money that comes out to their care. Conspiracy theory, possibly, a little bit on my part. But, it's not good.
And are there quite a few people that are responsible for that? Job?
Well, burn barrel duty was something that pretty much every unit would have. And I know that they've recently created a registry for it. If there are veterans who have not yet signed up to be on the Burn Barrel Registry, mm-hmm. they should. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like taking accountability and trying to prove this connection so that the veterans can get the health care that they need. Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I hadn't heard that there was actually a reason for some of these health issues. And I actually went to Mayo Clinic to try to figure out what's, you know, I keep testing positive for leukemia. Like, why is this, or lymphoma, excuse mm-hmm. me, like, but you're saying I don't actually have it. My body's just acting like it has it. And what is causing this? And they couldn't come up with anything. Mm-hmm. So when you get all these strange symptoms like that and they can't actually prove it, they certainly don't want to pay out for it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they are able to prove it, then the people who are on this registry, if they need help, they should be able to get it.
Gotcha. So, well, that's good to know. So if there are any listeners out there who maybe know somebody who might be impacted by this, that's a good thing to know about, mm-hmm. To research that. So how long were you in Iraq?
We were only there for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. Our commander died, actually, while we were there. And as far as I know, he is still the highest ranking official to die in Iraq. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have as many people in Iraq anymore. It's mostly, you know, the surrounding areas. But after he passed, which was sort of a civilian accident more than, you know, regular warfare,
gotcha.
We came back home. So, and I kind of was ETS'd or discharged, like my contract expired just a couple of weeks before stop loss was enabled.
Okay, so remind our listeners what stop loss is.
So stop loss is when you are enlisted, but there is a conflict somewhere, so they basically force you to stay in until they're sure that they don't need you anymore. And I kind of scooted by that. Luckily, I was still, one trip was enough. Like, it was, it was something else. I remember that you had Adele as a guest quite a while back, and her experience was very different from mine. She had a lot more personal conflict than I did. Mine was generally uneventful compared to most people I know that have been there. So I don't really like to complain about it a whole lot.
Sure. Well, and Adele was, she was a semi-truck driver, essentially. You know, and she was responsible for driving in convoys and had an IED blast.
I was a driver for an officer on a convoy. We didn't have any IEDs that actually hit us. Mm-hmm. We could see them firing off, you know, 30, 60 yards away, but we didn't actually lose anyone from fire.
Good.
Adele is also a Purple Heart recipient, and so she's basically queen of awesome no matter what. Like, you know.
But honestly, Audrey, anybody who serves in the military, when we have an all volunteer based military, which to me still to this day is one of the most amazing things about this country. So anyone who signs up to defend their country, pretty queenish, high in my book, that's for damn sure.
A survivor's guilt is pretty common among people who haven't really had it as hard as other people while they're there.
Sure.
There are things I remember about it. It's very jarring, whether it was as severe as hers or not. You know, I remember the day that we rolled into Iraq was the day after, the next day after Jessica Lynch was abducted. She was the first POW since, I think it was the Cold War or Vietnam or something like that. It had been quite some time, and we didn't have MP support or anything. Like, it was, your convoys are rushed by impoverished people who are begging for food and water and stealing things off of your truck and could also be carrying weapons. Like, it's stressful, don't get me wrong, but I still feel like compared with almost everyone I know who's been there, I was lucky.
Sure, and we thank you for your service. And anyone, again, anyone who signs the dotted line and puts the uniform on and agrees to go wherever they send you. I mean, nothing better, you know, no better people than that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So What was it like when you first landed in Iraq? I know you kind of talked a little bit about being rushed, but was it a culture shock?
Well, when we first arrived in the Middle East, we were actually in Kuwait. So you touched mm-hmm. on there as sort of like a yeah. safe haven, fuel up, let everybody get settled and everything before you actually roll into Iraq. And I remember the day that we actually rolled in. It's kind of funny to say now, but I had developed a list of codes to speak to my husband by phone, because obviously you can't tell people classified information sure. by phone or anything, and you don't want to endanger the people that you're with. But also, we knew that we were getting sent to Kuwait. Going to Iraq wasn't official mm-hmm. or anything mm-hmm. the day that we were leaving the U.S. And so I think my code was, when I get home, I want to go to Disney World. And that meant we are about to go to Baghdad. And I remember the day that I told him that mm-hmm. on the phone and what he was probably thinking as it happened. And I remember the day that we crossed the border into Iraq, hearing drums in my head, like a movie score or mm-hmm. something like that. And thinking that if this country gets its act together, they're going to have a heck of an Olympic team, because these people are running like 30 miles an hour barefoot to ask us for, mm-hmm. you know, food or water or eyeglasses or pretty much anything. It was so surreal. It doesn't even feel like it feels like you're watching a movie when it happens.
Yeah.
I remember finding out that alcohol is actually illegal there.
Right.
And so things like jasmine flavored popsicles are common because the men there will drink perfume to catch a buzz. Mm-hmm. So flowered flavored, you know, pops and popsicles or ice cream flavored stuff, like perfume, because they acquire a taste for this perfume that they have to drink to get drunk.
How much perfume do you have to drink to catch a buzz?
I mean, probably not too much.
I want to try it.
I had 4 marriage proposals by local Iraqis who thought that I was a princess because at the time I had highlights. Uh-huh. And, you know, most of the local women have very coarse black hair. So even though my hair is darker, it had highlights in it. And there were not a whole lot of women in our unit. So, and the other ones that were with us looked totally different. Either they were moms and were heavier or something. But I was just a magnet for local Iraqi people. Okay. And
any princes?
No, not a single one.
No. I mean, I know you had a husband at home, but the rules are different in Iraq,
Maybe I could have been the key to change there. The men can have like 6 wives. Maybe I could have been the pillar of change. I've been like, oh, I'm going to take about 4 husbands.
There you go.
I'm going to change the world.
Yeah. I don't know, guys. 4 husbands sounds
awful.
Sounds tough. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no.
I appreciate that you weren't a key for that change.
I mean, husbands are great, but hard pass.
You guys have that same look that people have when you find out that someone has like 9 kids. You know what I mean?
Trauma. Just trauma. That's all.
All right. So you're in Iraq. You come back home. You are, you're out of the military. Then what happens?
After I got out of the military, I needed to live someplace really hilly and green, I guess is the best way to put it.
No sand.
I was stationed in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So when I got back from Iraq, like I kept getting confused and thinking I was back in Iraq, even mm-hmm. though I was actually just in Oklahoma. I came to find out later that's what a flashback is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But ironically, I didn't do a lot of psychedelic drugs as a teenager, so I didn't know what a flashback was. And so we moved to Pittsburgh. And that was where I got pregnant with my first and started trying to grow my graphics empire, if you will. When I got pregnant for the first time, which was not long after I got back, of course, I had some complications that required that I stay on bed rest for 7.5 months.
No.
And
that's brutal.
My, so I started to really, I mean, daytime TV was shit. I mean, now you can stream anything, you can binge watch, but like
back then, Price is Right or Young and the Restless.
2005, it's, pretty, or Judge Judy.
Judge Judy.
Was the thing. Yeah. So I was pretty much laid up in bed with a laptop and, you know, I was always designing stuff and I was thinking, you know what would be great was if I could make posters and mouse pads and stuff. And I found a print-on-demand company called Cafe Press. And so I started making products through there, and I noticed all these other people were doing it, but the interface, like the online store, if you will, to buy their products looked awful. They were using pre-made templates that were given to them by this company. So I started to think, wow, like these people's stores could actually look a lot better. Like I wouldn't want to put my credit card information on a website that looks like this. And so in bed, I started designing stores for people, and I got so good at it that I actually ended up being elected to the board of that company, a community, what do they call it? Community representative or something like that. I got to go out to San Francisco and meet all these important people at the company, which, you know, is not.
You didn't really give a shit about.
Well, San Francisco.
I got to go to Alcatraz. Yeah. I got to see where the. Got to go where they made The Rock. I was all excited about that. But as far as meeting important people, I'm awful at that because I don't treat people different.
No, people are people.
People are people.
I do. And I feel like I shouldn't do that, but I do. I
know. I think that the same. We talk about authenticity on here. Yeah. And there are not a ton of people I've met who I can say are truly authentic to the people that they are, and you are one of those people, to your credit and to your benefit. Like,
I'm
there's
like
no
Samuel L. Jackson.
There's no
I'm
bullshit.
The realest motherfucker you're ever going to meet.
That is true. Like, if you want to know somebody's real opinion, just ask Audrey, because she will tell you. And she's not being a bitch about it. She's telling you because she cares about you enough to tell you the truth, to give you the facts, like, and will tell you how to make it better. So that's the good part. So anyway, so you start designing these stores, and then that takes off.
It took off. It got so crazy. I was charging people money to be placed on a waiting list. Like, you will pay this deposit, and sometime in the next 90 days, I will email you and say, I'm ready to do your store. And you have 24 hours to say, okay, let's do it. Or you lose your deposit. And they were still doing it. Like, it was, I did an online store for Cops. Like, what you gonna do? Like,
the show.
And The Deadliest Catch, which that was a funny one because they were trying to tell me that they were this huge show on the Discovery Channel, but I'm not outdoorsy. I'm a
I know, I'm like, Deadliest Catch, oh my God.
All right.
And so I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And so I'm doing their store, and I'm pasting pictures of this dude that looks like Tom Petty all over everything. And finally, one day, I went to Meijer, and I saw a box of fish sticks that had that guy, Sig, his name, Sig. I was like, wow, that's the guy that I just had to plaster all over this website. I guess they are legit. And like, Ricky Lake's ex-husband actually hit me up about 6 weeks ago for another website, which is kind of funny. He's an illustrator for the New York Times.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I had my minute there, but I didn't have staff. I was doing everything from the invoicing and the designing and the coding, like all of the things on my own. And so I tried to outsource, and I did the same thing that most companies who are trying to save money do, where they look at overseas options. And I wasn't qualified. Like, the quality of work is not good.
Sure.
Not good. And there seemed to be a language barrier every time it came to the invoicing and billing part of of the process. And so I sort of burnt out on it a little bit. And then I took up a contract with a company that's in Michigan, not super local on Cassopolis, doing e-commerce with them through Yahoo. And I did that for about 8 years. And it, so it was about a year and a half ago that I stopped working with them. And so, yeah, it's been crazy. Like working for yourself, being an entrepreneur, like making about the same then that I do now, it seems like everybody's dream in a lot of ways. The whole stay-at-mom part of it aside, like you kind of work in your pajamas, but now that I have a grown-up job and I'm putting my finger quotes up here.
Your fancy heels.
I realized like there was a lot of professional maturing that I didn't get to do sitting in my house because socially I still feel kind of awkward. You know, working at home is really great in a lot of ways. I never missed anything that my kids did. Every class party, field trip, whatever you want, I was there because I had that kind of flexibility. But then when I got divorced, I realized in the real world, like the working world, on paper, I was a ghost. You working from home for that long, like you don't have reputable companies. You just have lists of clients and stuff, but it's a scary place to be in. You don't have access to benefits or anything like that. Yeah. It wasn't a good fit for me as a single mom.
So it wasn't a good benefit or it wasn't a good fit as a single mom because of the benefits, because of why else?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. You know, when you think about who your friends are, they're people that you either met from work or have socialized with in some way. Well, when your work and your home, which your work is all online, are all the same thing, you don't really meet a lot of new people and you don't evolve. You know, you don't. And so I kind of feel like on the one hand, it was the best upbringing I could have given to my son, but on like the professional end of it, I feel like I'm kind of behind, you know, because I don't have experience with typical inner office things that come natural to people. Like, I didn't know that you can't discuss why people have been let go because of confidentiality issues. I didn't realize that was a thing, like, because I'd been working from home and that line of, you know, TMI, that's lacking a little bit when you don't have that interaction with people.
Sure. Well, especially because there is no TMI when you're a stay-at-home working mom. Like, you talk with your kids about everything. Like, they follow you to the bathroom. Like, there is no TMI. Well, it's all TMI.
I have a girlfriend who freelances from home. She's a writer in Santa Monica. And she's not a mom, but she freelances from home and used to be in the working world, you know, she would go to an agency, had a professional job. And when she moved, she decided to start freelancing, but has also had sort of those different problems, but still those problems. Like you said, you know, your friends oftentimes, they evolve from relationships that you make when you're working or people that you meet through people or things like that. And she's actually found it really hard sort of finding connections outside of work because she's working from home. And also even from a communicative standpoint, you know, she doesn't get to just walk over to the group of people that she's working with and say, hey, is this what you mean? Let's brainstorm on this, those sorts of things. And so, you know, she runs into those problems as well. So,
well, the other end of it, too, is that, you know, for most professional people, there has to be some sort of balance between work and personal life. Well, when your work is in your personal life, there's really no differentiating between the two. And so you're always on to a degree. Like, you just, you're never fully engaged when it is your personal time because your work is literally only 8 feet away. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I was a little burnt out from it for a while, like doing just pretty much everything nonstop. Like when I did COPS, I worked on that store. They had a very tight deadline in time for premiere. And so I worked for 3 days straight without sleeping. Like my ex-husband was bringing food to my desk and everything. And I'm thinking like, who does that in the regular world now? Like mm-hmm. where you just don't stop at all. Like it's very, very hard to find a healthy balance when you're working from home. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's so many benefits to it that I think that no matter where you are, if you're working in an office or anywhere outside of your home or staying home or working from home, you're going to have so many pros and cons with each of it that the grass is always going to look greener
sure. yeah.
to some degree, no mm-hmm. matter what. Mm-hmm. So
I bet there are a lot of listeners who have navigated that world where they worked from home and then they tried to enter back into, I guess we can call it the corporate world, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. Did you find it was difficult because you had so long a period of time working from home with that on your resume? Did you find it was difficult to land a job in corporate world?
Well, as far as looking for a job in the corporate world, I found that I was getting a lot of people who are very interested in my resume. But then during the interview process, something was not going well because I wasn't having a whole lot of success initially with the interview process. And I think, again, a part of that is just not having that experience and background in the working outside of home life. You know, I don't really have much of a filter, and I pretty much am very blunt mm-hmm. and just probably not a picture-perfect corporate-y type person, at least not during my interviews, as it turns out. But once I finally was able to show somebody, the place that I work now is the only place that I had interviewed with where they had given me a test project, show us what you can do. Mm-hmm. And that was where I nailed it. All the other places were very, very focused on the actual interview process. And that part of it, I really don't feel like I was doing as well at mm-hmm. because I was working from home.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and I can speak from experience because I've been in my position pre-Audrey and post-Audrey. And it's made, I mean, her work speaks for itself. Like it's made a tremendous difference in our digital strategy and footprint out there in what we're able to do, you know? So I'm glad that you were given the opportunity to show that because the stuff you do is just phenomenal. So, all right. So you're in this world now. You've had all of this kind of tech experience in different realms. What do you find, and I don't even know how to ask this question, but you're a woman in kind of a male-dominated world. Do you think that would be a correct assumption for me to make?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So talk about that.
Definitely. I mean, if you think about the IT department of pretty much any company, it's going to be 99.9% male. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty stereotypical. Programming and IT, computer nerd stuff is like any other math and science where, you know, it's just women are not, we're not making our mark as well mm-hmm. in that field. And I wish that it was a little different because from a programming standpoint, I was saying earlier, you know, it's like doing math. There's so many different ways to come up with the same result. Mm-hmm. And I think that women would naturally be pretty good.
Because it's math, but it's an artistic form of math.
You know what's funny is that math, actual math, mm-hmm. intimidates me. I don't like to do actual mm-hmm. math. But programming is math with words instead of numbers. And so to me, it's like trying to solve a problem. It's not nearly as intimidating. I think that there are probably a lot of people out there who hear math and this anxiety creeps up in them.
Yeah, I'm one of those.
And there is actually a school system in Florida that recognized that, and they developed a math program that was based on programming instead.
Hmm.
And they found that children were far more successful in learning basic math concepts when it didn't feel like math.
Hmm.
Very cool stuff.
That is really cool stuff, because my second grader and fourth grader come home with their math homework, and I want to bang my head against the wall. Yeah. When I'm trying to help them.
This Common Core stuff. Like, I'm lucky that my son's a genius and I don't have to help with his homework.
Yeah.
But my daughter, I may have to help at some point. And so I am dreading that day.
Then you just send her to your son.
Right? Yeah.
I mean,
that's a great idea.
There we go.
That's a great idea.
I'll outsource that shit. Well, I'm lucky that their father is a genius. And so whenever they bring me, like, the math stuff, they're like, Mom, can you look at my work? And I'm like, yeah, I can look at it. Looks like math. Like, hey, but if you got history homework or English homework, like, I'm your girl. But math and science, they'll be like, why? Tell me about, like, the Earth's rotation and the sun. And I'm like, ew, your dad. I think, aren't you going to your dad's in, like, an hour? Like, that'd best be described by Dr. Carlin. But, you know, we all have our strengths.
Well, the problem is that because there are so many different ways to come to a conclusion with math, this Common Core, you have to do it this certain way. And it's different than the way that
we learned
growing up. But
so
the answer is the same.
The answer's the same, but it's so much more difficult to get there. What are they doing?
And that's why programming is so easy for people who feel intimidated by math, is because it's accepted. There are lots of different ways to come to the same answer.
Gotcha. So what advice do you have for young women and men too? I don't want to just single it out, but I know that there are fewer women in that field. So people who are considering that, any advice you'd offer them?
Well, my advice would be, like, one of the reasons that I feel like I am more valuable is because I can merge the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain by doing the graphics and the coding. So they're two very, very different things, but if you can actually master both, I think that that makes you indispensable.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's what I would do. I would try to make it so that you are valuable in both ways. As far as women who are going into programming and stuff, I would say stick with it, because we're naturally better at it. Let's be honest. Like, we're going to find the best way to come up with a solution. I might be a little biased.
Uh-huh. Sure. Oh, gosh. It sounds like French to me. I don't know. Like what Audrey talks about, like source and code and it's like a whole other language, but not even like a language that I could comprehend. It's like a Star Trek language or something. It's like Klingon.
It's actually several different languages.
Well, that's why.
So it's really essentially what it is learning different languages. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, like, the language to code a web page is a little bit different than what you would use to code an email or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, they have different rules, and it gets tricky making something work in Firefox and Chrome versus Internet Explorer. This works like this in this one, and this property works like this in this one. It gets pretty, pretty tedious.
I'm really thankful that I just get to yell over, Audrey, can I have an associated image for this page? Thank you. That's about the extent of what I know when it comes to that. I just put the words on there. How it works, Ange.
This is why people need to reach out to Audrey.
Yes.
For the things.
For all the things. She makes the things.
I draw the things.
She draws the things. Absolutely. So I also asked you here, your background to me is just so fascinating. What you do is fascinating. And then, you know, as listeners will find out as they contact you, like, your output, your products are second to none. But I also love that you're a little bit edgy in the sense that you you sometimes make me uncomfortable about my privacy when it comes to the internet, because I'm like so naive when it comes to things. I'm like, well, but it's private, or they can't see me through that camera. And then Audrey will like drop some truth bombs on me, and I'm like, what do you mean?
Is that my choice? Is that naivety? Is that my choice?
Ignorance is bliss.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Okay.
So, are you familiar with AshleyMadison.com?
I am. I remember that story.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, it was launched on CNN, that, or your news network of choice, excuse me, that this basically adultery dating service, AshleyMadison.com, had been hacked. And all these people's private information, like the fact they were members there, mm-hmm. It's a hookup site.
It's a hookup site for married men, yeah.
And so the story comes out, they've been hacked, you can find out who was on there, celebrities, clergymen, people just offing themselves by the dozens,
yes,
after this thing
that
comes out. And it was kind of a tricky thing, because when the story was released, you were able to search for an email address to find out if your significant other had been subscribing to these services. But as an added twist, they said, well, just because your significant other's email address is on there doesn't mean they actually used it, because they were using spam bots. Mm-hmm. And so people were getting implicated where they hadn't actually tried to use it. And so just because your, you know, husband or wife or whatever, their email address came up, doesn't actually make them 100%
sure.
guilty. Mm. It drove me insane to no end. I had, you know, my ex-husband, I had already suspected infidelity on like 5 different occasions. And I asked him if he had ever had a membership there. And he mentioned, you know, I had one once when we were separated, but I never used it, because you have to pay to mm-hmm. actually chat with people. That makes sense. He was cheap. Could be true. just wasn't sitting right with me. I didn't buy it. So I downloaded the entire database. 3.5 million adulterers from Ashley Madison. It took me 12 and a half hours to even open the file. But when I did, sure enough, I found out that my ex-husband had spent $650, 50 cents per text that you send to someone through that, and $650 he had spent trying to hook up with married people through this website. Even though it was my 15th anniversary and I was 7.5 months pregnant with his child when I happened on this information, that was enough. That was how my marriage ended.
Oh my gosh.
And it got even crazier after that, because then it started to come out that a lot of the people who were, they thought they were chatting with women, but they were actually chatting with spam bots.
Sure.
These were fake robotic women, because every time you text them, it pays
right.
50 cents. And so they were racking up money thinking they were going to get laid by some horny housewife when it was actually just a robot.
I just don't understand how you can be that ignorant about that. Either. I mean, doesn't that feel like common sense?
Well, maybe because it's a official site. Maybe that makes people feel more...
They had a good graphic designer. I give them that. The site looked legit. I mean, if I was, a complete and total scumbag and wanted to hook up, I might have used that site.
So you were able to download it because you...
That part wasn't entirely legal. Like, so.
See, that's what I mean about the privacy thing. Like, people can hack into shit, right?
Well,
yeah. I mean, we're not going to call it hacking. We're going to call it accessing.
My hacking skills are actually very amateur. Like, the reason that it took me 12 and a half hours to open this file is because I wasn't better at parsing a database. Like, it,
naturally,
you know, it's, yes. But I have some very valid concerns about the hackability and transparency of our technology. You know, I don't know if this is okay for your show, but I'm also a quietly religious person. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've heard, but Sweden just crossed the threshold of 3,000 people who have taken a mark on their right hand that stores their medical record and all their information. Oh. They use it to buy and sell goods. And it's creeping me out. And I could totally see us going that direction. Hmm. It bothers me to no end. Mm-hmm. It does. You know, if they're taking a mark or a chip in their hand, and they're saying, like, you know, well, now the paramedics will be able to access your medical record if you have an emergency. They can see what your allergies are, mm-hmm. and what medications you're on, and that all sounds like a great idea until you piss somebody off, yeah. with some computer skills who's going to delete the part where you're allergic to penicillin. Or, you know,
because there are still humans behind some of these things, and governments are governments. Like, you...
well, trackability. You start chipping people, and trackability is just...
I mean, all you have to do is read a little bit of history to know that, that you never really fully trust people in power. And when you have the capability for tracking folks, that's the same thing.
Yeah, they compare it very much to microchipping a pet. Mm-hmm. And I'm not opposed to microchipping a pet. I have had really terrible experience with dogs. I haven't had a dog who wasn't a complete and total asshole. Mm-hmm. Where I was at, there were a couple of times I wished I would lose that dog. Right. But overall,
right.
I actually do support the idea of microchipping pets. But people, not so much. Like, I have a lot of concerns about that, especially the part where you have to be microchipped to buy and sell goods.
Yeah.
That bothers me.
Hmm. Right, because what's the thinking behind that? I mean, that's a...
I can see where there's some modern, logical, you know, thinking behind it. It would be a lot harder to steal someone's identity that way.
Sure.
You know, what do you call it? CW3 number on the back of cards is supposed to help with that. I mean, like, that's stepping it up a notch for sure. I can certainly see what the medical benefits are, but I still can't shake the feeling it bothers me.
Mm-hmm. It also feels a little like branding to some extent, like you're being branded somehow.
Yeah, I think, and the trackability makes me nervous, like, too.
At that point, you just become another number, right?
You can never go on the lam. Like, you couldn't, like, see, my plan is, if all goes to hell, I'm just going to disappear to Alaska. But you can never do that if you were chipped, you know? Like, they wouldn't even let you on the plane.
So GPS locations is part of it.
Yeah.
This chip thing.
GPS locations. Oh, that's another thing. So, explain this to me. How is it that I talk about something? I don't even search for it in Internet Explorer. I just talk about it. Maybe my phone's fine. And then I get on Facebook and I scroll and that fucking thing's right there popping up.
So part of the Patriot Act is that they are allowed to intercept your phone audio for 6 seconds at a time. So they can hear like little bleeps. Mm-hmm. of things that you say. They're not going to listen to a whole conversation, but they don't need the whole conversation. All we're looking for is keywords. Mm-hmm. And so it's becoming more and more common that people will talk about something, not even search it.
Right, that's what I mean.
On their phone, but the phone is in range, and they were talking about it to someone else, and those keywords are picked up, and now it's targeted advertising.
Target marketing.
But how do the consumers get those? Because I thought the Patriot Act was government.
Well, it is government listening. Mm-hmm. That is, the Patriot Act is government listening. Mm-hmm. As far as what Facebook can do, what Google can do, honestly, I don't quite know what all they can do.
Yeah.
Because, number one, they do what any other major technology company is going to do when you sign those terms and conditions or agree or whatever that you never read. And also... You just don't, you don't even realize like this is open on your phone mm-hmm. or anything like you just, I don't, the people that were in charge of the court hearing for Facebook with, oh my God, what's his face? From Facebook.
Zuckerberg.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So he was supposed to be getting grilled about things like this last summer. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. Do you remember the fact that the people who are asking him the questions have clearly never actually used the internet? Mm-hmm.
I think,
So even I'm not really clear on what they can and can't do.
But there's got to be something in terms of listening or somehow catching those keywords when you're not even searching it, because it does. That shit pops up on my phone. And there's got to be.
Being in marketing yourself.
I mean, right? I like that part
of it. You know all about targeted marketing.
I know the targeted marketing, and I know, like, when you search and the keywords, it's just the part where I don't search for it.
Right.
That's the part that creeps me out.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time.
I know.
People, like, or you have gone somewhere a couple of times, and all of a sudden, without even asking, your phone is recommending.
Oh, yeah.
They, like, this girl that I work with, every Friday, it tells her how long it'll take her to get to the brewery.
I was going to say to the nearest winery.
It's a lot of work. And she'll be like, it thinks I go to Watermark every Friday. And we're like, well, sometimes you go to Watermark every Friday.
Where?
But yeah, I mean,
that's crazy. Oh, wait, she wasn't talking about you.
No, not even me.
I was not talking about you.
No, I don't go to Watermark every Friday. I mean, I wouldn't mind it. I love Watermark.
Right.
But no. So, yeah, there's some, it's a scary world. Should I be, this is a very important question to end on. Should I be putting a piece of tape or something over the little camera on my laptop? That's a serious question.
Honestly, I don't think your laptop's going to be an issue. If you were going to put tape over anything, that Xbox, the Xbox One, the Sony, because the people that are hacking, if you think about what kind of people they are, they're not looking for your laptop. And a lot of times, honestly, these people aren't even trying to do serious damage, like people who take over, you know, your baby monitors, and they're just messing with people and stuff like that. That's, if you think about what our world has become, when we were little, when you and I were little, we could go out and play. Mm-hmm. How many kids go out and play anymore?
Yeah.
This is their play. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's really just a prank, but it's freaky as hell, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would be more concerned about the things that are, you know, in your house. You know, if you've got a smart TV,
like Alexa.
Alexa doesn't have a camera, but she does have audio,
right?
And I've heard a thing or two that Alexa, you know, is kind of listening in. And I saw a thing online the other day that a parrot was actually able to order like several $1,000 worth of goods through Alexa. This parrot that got rejected from an annual or animal sanctuary for using too much vulgarity.
Oh, it sounds like our kind of parrot.
Was actually ordering
a
bunch of stuff off Alexa. But no, I think that as far as infiltrating your house, most of the people that would do that, it would be sort of a prank, and it's going to be through a gaming system. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as financial stuff and like online security and stuff like that, like, I don't know, that's not something that keeps me up so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm glad to say that most financial institutions and stuff are aware enough of this issue that if it's obvious you've been infiltrated, they will have your back.
Yeah, so, and constantly on guard. I mean,
right.
And working for a financial institution, we know that. We know they're constantly on guard.
Right, so So as weird as it sounds, mm-hmm. because those kind of safeguards are in place, mm-hmm. financial stuff to me is mm-hmm. like the least of your worries
yeah.
because it'll be taken care of one
yeah.
way or another.
Yeah.
But people looking into your house uh-huh. and stuff like that, that's the part that I'm still a little
that creeps me out.
A little concerned about.
Yeah, don't be looking in my house. I got a 12-gauge.
But the thing is, with most people, like, if they just change their password on things that they buy from the store, they mm-hmm. they bring it home, mm-hmm. they set it up and everything.
Don't do 1, 2, 3, 4.
And they don't change their, you know,
yeah.
That's where the problem
is. It wasn't not common sense these days.
It's the same. Like, when I walk into someone's house and realize that they haven't even put a password on their Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I guess from a banking standpoint, it's okay. You're going to be taken care of one way or another. But there's plenty of other stuff that you don't necessarily want, you know. So.
Well. I would say that I'm going to lose some sleep at night, but I like the whole ignorance is bliss part. So I'm just going to say, you know what, if something happens, like, I'm just going to call Audrey and she'll take care of it. And if someone messes with me, I'll just have her hack into whatever system they have and we'll embarrass the fuck out of them and then they'll never want to mess with me again.
That's a good plan.
Thanks.
Solid.
Solid. So Andy's like, geez. So it's a great episode. I learned a ton on this episode. Again, do you want people to contact you? You have a side hustle. You do things outside of.
I do. I don't market my side hustle too much because I don't want
to get too busy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, mm-hmm. like I'll work with people who are awesome, mm-hmm. but you know.
So what I'm hearing is if you're awesome and you need something done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want us to share your contact information?
Sure, that's
fine. Okay, you go ahead and share. How can people contact you?
Audrey, AUDRIE, Phoenixa, PHOENIXA, all one word, AudreyPhoenixa @gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And don't be sending her spam. Don't be sending her stuff that she doesn't want to see. We're talking about legitimate folks out there who are looking for some quality graphic design or storefronts, correct, website design, and I'm telling you folks, and we had, you know, 30,000 listeners, season one, we're on track for that and beyond season two, so we have a lot of folks out there who listen to us. I'm telling you, she's legit. Like, if you're looking for quality stuff, and not stuff that is done by a first-year college student or, She's the real deal. So go ahead and give her an email. Is that right? Give her an email. Shoot her an email. I'm really good with words. And
get a hold of her.
Thanks, Ange. You know what I've had too much of? Magic idea stuff. Thanks, Justin and Epicosity. All right. So I do want to end with we tend to end sometimes with our favorite meme or quote that we had that week that relates to the show. And I really want to look at Epicosity's page because they crack me up. And they talk about their mission. And so they are an ideas company. And they said, status quos are made to be broken, shaken, and slapped across the face. If you want to keep doing what you're doing because it's safe, have at it. But if you believe you can change the world through bold ideas, we're crazy enough to take on the challenge.
And so is Audrey.
And so is Audrey. I feel like magic idea stuff is the things that dreams are made of.
100%.
So, any final thoughts, Ange?
No, I think you wrapped that up well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we will end it there. If you have any comments or suggestions, follow us on Facebook at Hustlin' and Heels. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter. We technically have a profile. I haven't tweeted anything in forever. I need to do that, though. I'm awful at Twitter. I need to outsource Twitter.
Just give me the password.
I know. I can't remember what it is. Or you can send us an email at letschat@hhpod.com. We are hoping to see some of you Who are in the Kalamazoo area. Ange and I will be at the Why Not Festival in Kalamazoo on February 2nd. Mm-hmm. We will have a booth. Come see us. Come find us. I'm planning on having a super basket with some wine from some of our favorite wineries that we will raffle up there. Also, if you would like to be on our email list and you would like us to send you an email every week with our show link so you don't forget to listen, just shoot me a message either on Facebook or actually on our website at hahpod.com. You can do a contact form and you will get on our email list. So I guess that's it.
It is. And by the time you guys listen to us, it'll be 2019.
Yes. So great episode. Thank you, Audrey, for being here with us today.
It's amazing.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And we will see you later, hustlers.
See ya.
Hustlin' in Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Angie Crocker. All views and opinions expressed on the show are theirs and theirs alone. Your executive producer is Michael Bussing, and all music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder with PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Angie on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. You can also send the show an email to letschat@HIHpod.com. Feel free to write into the show if you're hustling in heels, tennis shoes, work boots, slippers, socks, or barefoot. So be sure to reach out to us if you've got a question, comment, want to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all the ladies have today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time for their newest episode. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.